This is Napkin Scribbles, a podcast by author and professor Len Sweet. Support for Napkin Scribbles comes from George Fox Evangelical Seminary in Portland, Oregon.
It's time now for the high point of the year for many scholars, and that is the coming up in November for the American Academy of Religion Society Biblical Literature, AARSBL. Huge event. Tens of thousands of people, religious scholars in all various disciplines, biblical scholars come from all over the world. As I'm thinking and looking at my colleagues and their excitement for this, and in many ways how the whole year revolves around this moment, I got thinking about the role of scholarship in the life of the church. When the New Testament lists the ministries and gifts of the early church, it never mentions scholars. It does mention teachers, and so maybe scholars are in there with teachers. Or maybe we're there in the speakers and unknown tongues category. I don't know. But at any rate, what is the value of scholars and scholarship in the church? Why is the role of scholars and scholarship not appreciated today by the church? Now, you say you may not agree with that, but I just want to kind of talk out loud a little bit about why I think that that's the case. And why I believe the ongoing life of the church needs scholars, it needs scholarships. After all, we're people of history, we're a people of the book or the story, and both history and story require ongoing study and exploration for fresh and fuller understanding and constant new data and documents and revelation. So if we're to be in the world, but not of the world, we need scholars to help us understand the times in which we are to be in, but not of. And I could go on and on there, but where we are today, it seems to me, is that for some people in the church, the mark of the beast is no longer 666, but PhD. What has happened to alienate the church from its scholars and from their scholarships? And what's happened to alienate scholars and scholarship from the church? And as I was thinking about this, preparing just, you know, in my head some of these thoughts to get ready to share with you on this Napkin Scribbles, I thought, well, maybe there's some jealousy. There has been, and I've seen evidence of it, some jealousy involved here. Jealousy that, you know, the scholarly lifestyle is one where you get paid to study, and you get summers off, and all that stuff that goes with anybody who's in the world of teaching, but especially in university scholarship. And it's true that tenured professors are maybe the last of the nobility, and some of them come to expect to be treated like nobility. And there are some cases, and they become kind of illustrations, where some academics have a way of turning a chair, once they get one, into a bed, where they sleep and snore for the rest of their academic careers. But that's the exception. The rule is, and these most scholars that I know are driven by their scholarship. They're constantly reading and thinking and talking and writing and totally almost possessed by their discipline. Or maybe the alienation is caused because of, I don't know what else to call it, but academies. This is a kind of academic version of speaking in tongues, where you learn to speak a language that nobody else can understand because it's so technical. And one of my favorite novelists, the Italian novelist Italo Calvino, said this about academics, and I'm not getting this exactly right, but it's something like, you academics have a weird mentality. He said you would rather not be readable and sacrifice that minimum of stylistic elegance, which is actually a social duty, than give up a little piece of erudition. And then he said something like, as though you were always writing for the committees that appoint university chairs. I'll never forget that last line. Always writing for the committees that appoint university chairs. And it is easy, after decades spent careening the corridors and climbing the walls of the ivory tower, that academics, we can come down with both glossolalia and academicia, which is a double whammy. And then maybe the alienation has occurred because when the academy does engage the church, the fights are so inconsequential. I think about the sterility of academic discourse about the church, and the fighting over little tiny things. Freud called it the narcissism of small differences, where scholars will gnaw on this bone and just not let go of it, and it's just not even a bone; it's just a little tiny sliver. There's an old line that academic disputes are vicious because the stakes are so low. Henry Kissinger said it was his. John Kenneth Galbraith said it was his. But actually, it was an obscure professor of political science at Columbia University named Wallace Sayre that it really said it first. But that's a whole other story. And who cares? And I just did a little narcissism of small differences in telling you that. Sorry. But the problem is, regardless of the alienation, most scholars are no longer in service to the church, but to the academy, and more specifically to the guild. There's been a massive revolution in theological education where the accountability is now not to the church, but to the guild. One of my favorite theologians, David Tracy, who's a Roman Catholic theologian at the University of Chicago, says that a theologian needs to be connected to three publics: the church, the academy, and the culture. And I could not agree more, but PhD culture, academic culture as it is today, is totally obsessed with the guild, not the church. Some degree the culture, but it's only a very narrow range of that culture, political culture, certainly not pop culture, certainly not folk culture, only highbrow in political culture. Religious studies, you could even make the case, which I have done elsewhere, that it has become its own religion. It has its own rites, its own rituals, an annual hegira to its Vatican, the ARSBL. And scholars today have almost become like pagan priests, calling down through quotes of the academic celebrities. Hollywood, academe has its own Hollywood star system. And by invoking those in the star system, you are invoking the protection of the gods and invoking the higher powers of the academic conventions. When I was getting my PhD, I saw in my professors high commitment to the discipline, but also high commitment to theory. And I realized very early on that a lot of scholarship was interpretive choice, not historical fact. And this kind of, in some ways, shaped me. And that theory then, in many ways, demeaned the church, this academic theory, demeaned the church and deemed the biblical story nothing more than that. Just one story among many stories, not the story. And that's one reason why most of academic research may be ecclesially irrelevant. Scholars are rigorously schooled to omit from their work everything except logic, technique, theory, forget intuitions, metaphor stories, puzzles, connections. This is the very stuff of faith. In fact, when I got my PhD, my dissertation advisor told me to excise every metaphor from my writing, that the more I could write like a mathematician or a chemist, the better my scholarship would be. And basically, my work was crushed under all these qualifications and on the other hands. The seminary is the place where once upon a time the church did its best thinking. Now it's the place where the guild does some of its best thinking. Priesthood of believers means that we are all of us. I mean all of us, theologians. Some do academic theology, some do amateur. Amateur means literally lover of. Some academic theology, some amateur theology. But if you're a disciple of Jesus, you're a theologian. I don't often quote or think of the words of R.C. Sproul, but he said once, you can have theology in your head without it being in your heart, but theology can't be in your heart unless it's first in your head. I believe that every person is a theologian and needs to be a theologian, not a professional one, but an amateur one. And I believe that every church should be a seminary, a word that literally means seedbed. Every church is a seedbed for faith. Every church is a seminary for intellectual inquiry and faith formation. I also believe that my scholarship is as much a part of the ministry of the church as that of the pastor. Let me repeat. My scholarship is as much a part of the ministry of the church as that of the pastor. We need some new models of scholars and scholarship of the church. We need the seminaries to rediscover the church and to find some accountability to the church, not just the guild. Len Sweet here.